Thank you very much. We will now move to ARPA and Mr. Shuden.
Thank you very much. And the honorable members of this committee are studying online hatred and what, if anything, the federal government can do to restrict it. Before we can address how to fix the problem, we need to first ask, where does the problem come from and who is best suited to fix it? In a certain sense, the dark corners of the web are a window into the dark corners of the human heart. Greed, lust, hatred, anarchy, covetousness, lies infect the internet and our hearts as well. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, writing in the Gulag Archipelago, says this: the line separating good and evil passes not through states, nor between classes, nor between political parties either, but right through every heart and through all human hearts. And even in the best of all hearts, there remains an unuprooted small corner of evil. Since then, he says, I have come to understand the truth of all the religions of the world. They struggle with the evil inside a human being, inside every human being. It is impossible, he says, to expel evil from the world in its entirety, but it is possible to constrict it within each person. Charles Colson, founder of Prison Ministries International, builds on this idea in his book, Justice That Restores. He writes the following: there is no more urgent task than to restore the sense of community cohesion and to build a virtuous character into common life. Without individual virtue, one cannot achieve a virtuous culture. Without a virtuous culture, one cannot hire enough policemen to keep order. As Michael Novak has trenchantly observed, adapted to a Canadian audience, in a virtuous culture, we have 37 million policemen. In a culture that mocks virtue, we cannot hire enough policemen. So who is best suited to offer solutions to the problem of online hatred? I don't think the honourable members of this committee realize it, but you have actually already made a big step in the right direction when, just over a year ago, you amended Bill C-51 in order to preserve the protections afforded to houses of worship in Section 176 of the Criminal Code. Not only did you signal rightly that you care about the protection of vulnerable citizens in a state of prayer and worship, whether that's in a mosque, a synagogue, temple, or a church, more than that, you preserved protections for the institutions that can inculcate that virtue in individuals so that we can have a virtuous society. If we want that virtuous society, we need to protect churches and mosques and synagogues to continue to preach peace, shalom, Shalom. And that's where the work against online hate starts. And it is absolutely necessary for this committee, indeed all of Parliament, to understand this. Do not undermine houses of worship. Protect them and expect good things from them. However, I'm not suggesting that the state has no other role in combating violence and the senseless slaughter resulting from seething hatred as witnessed in New Zealand and Pittsburgh. The Hebrew Psalms speak to the proper role of the state. Psalm 72 says, for he, the king, will deliver the needy who cry out, the afflicted who have no one to help. He will take pity on the weak and the needy and save the needy from death. He will rescue them from oppression and violence, for precious is their blood in his sight. This psalm points to the God-given role of the state to protect from bloodshed and violence the weak, the needy, the vulnerable citizen. The Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Romans, he builds on this command. He says, the one in authority is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. They are God's servants, agents of wrath, to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. So a clear application of this biblical passage to online hatred would be that the government does have a role in enacting swift justice to punish a wrongdoer seeking violence against another person or group of people. So where the vitriol of online hatred rises to the level of incitement to violence or threats to violence, which are crimes under the Criminal Code, Section 264.1, threats, 318, advocating genocide, and 319, public incitement to hatred, then the police must act swiftly to investigate, to arrest, to charge, and then to prosecute. Perhaps, and I put this out there as a thought experiment, but perhaps one impediment to swift action and to swift justice on the crimes of advocating genocide and public incitement to hatred are the unusual requirements that the Attorney General's consent is needed to proceed. Perhaps by removing those two subsections, we could increase the ability of police to pursue without delay action to stop such crimes from happening. However, one word of warning that ARPA Canada wants to share: we are very concerned about overzealous attempts to fix the problem of online hate. We co-signed a letter requesting the Justice Committee to study this issue with a good faith understanding that we'd be able to raise legitimate concerns about what would constitute going too far. We are very concerned about any attempt to reinstate a hate speech provision in the Canadian Human Rights Act. These provisions have been shown to be ineffective and often abused. They chill freedom of expression and are applied in a demonstrably unfair way. Let me give you just one example of what some commentators have described as being politically correct double standard. In 2003, in a case called Johnson versus Music World Limited, a complaint was made against a record label for a song called Kill the Christian. The lyrics of the song were read into the record by the complainant and included the following. "You," referring to Christians, "you are the one we despise. Day in, day out, your words comprise lies. I will love watching you die. Soon it will be and by your own demise. Satan wants you dead. Kill the Christian, kill the Christian, kill the Christian, kill the Christian. The death of prediction, kill the Christian, dead." The panel found that while the content and the tone of that communication appeared on their face to be discriminatory, there was, and I'm quoting, "very little vulnerability of the target group," end quote. So no violation of hate speech. And yet, 3 years later, in a case called Lund versus Boisson, a panel found that a letter published in a mainstream newspaper in Red Deer, Alberta, that made disparaging remarks about homosexuality was in fact hate speech and ordered the writer to cease publishing in newspapers, in emails, on the radio, in public speeches, including sermons, or on the internet in future. The panel chair for both of those decisions was the same person, Laurie Andreychuk. So public policy discussions, I would argue, require as broad and as open access to expression as is possible. Freedom of expression ought to be such that all citizens feel free to speak about all public policy issues as best they can. We can preserve that freedom. We must preserve that freedom. And by putting finite resources into hate speech codes other than the criminal code, the government potentially will distract from true hate speech that leads to violence. And that's a distraction that will not do much to curb the kind of violence we saw in Pittsburgh or in New Zealand. So to conclude, my request would be as follows. One, take seriously the protection of other institutions in society that can inculcate virtue in our citizens, including religious institutions. Two, that the state needs to demonstrate swift justice against these crimes. Ecclesiastes 8:11 says, when the sentence for a crime is not quickly carried out, people's hearts are filled with schemes to do wrong. So this committee should consider removing the requirement for the Attorney General's consent to prosecute incitements to genocide and public hatred in sections 318 sub 3 and 319 sub 6 of the Criminal Code. And finally, we'd ask that we do not entertain incorporating hate speech measures into the Canada Human Rights Act. This distracts resources from the more pressing work of preventing violence against vulnerable citizens. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and I would appreciate if you would share the links to the two judgments you referenced.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cameron, the floor is yours, sir.